And now, a moment from the Movie Geeks United Archive.
And their attempts to make it more realistic, more real world, they are pulling in all of these, you know, where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about the Joker, the anarchist, the guy that doesn't care about anything. He just wants to watch it burn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we heard that from the terrorists, that they just want to destroy us, you know. They don't want to negotiate. They don't want money. They're not afraid to, you know. And all those little references from real world show up in this movie in terms of the surveillance, you know, Big Brother, and,
mm-hmm.
and to do good, you know, what kind of shortcuts you need to take and if it's worth it in the end.
Right.
You know, like the surveillance plot line in it.
Yeah.
And so many other elements of it.
And Lucius is our conscience when it comes to that. He's like the, you know, he's really appalled by that scenario. And I think what I love about this film, what I love about Nolan, is he is where Burton and especially Schumacher just wrote off a lot of these minor characters. He is given, well, I didn't even think Lucius Fox was in any of the previous films before Begins, but he's given him, Alfred, and especially Gary Oldman, they're like the voice of conscience in this. They're like, you know, they're saying what, you know, they're saying the things that are in our minds, you know, about what's right and wrong. I think, and this is a spoiler, folks, so tune out if you want. I think the conversation that Gary Oldman has with his son at the very end of the film sums up who and what Batman is to all of us. That last 5 minutes when he's telling his son about Batman is beautiful, tragic, but beautiful, but very real.
Everybody, it's Movie Geeks United here with you this Sunday evening. Glad everyone can join us either live or on replay. Tonight we are going to discuss The Dark Knight Rises, which has for a long time been one of the most anticipated films, and definitely of this summer. How are you guys doing? Jerry,
doing well.
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay. So, 4 years ago, we did a roundtable where we discussed The Dark Knight between the three of us with Chris, and that was highly enjoyable. For obvious reasons, this conversation won't probably be as celebratory because it's connected to the tragic shooting that we've all been inundated with. So, you know, we're not a political show. I don't want to talk about politics or politicize it at all. I just want to talk about in terms of what you guys felt when you first saw it and how do you think this incident might play out in terms of the movie, how it relates to the movie?
I don't know. I felt numb all day Friday when I got up for a cinema. I probably only slept like 2 hours because I went to go see the midnight show. And I probably only slept 2 hours, and this is the first thing I see at, like, 6:30 in the morning.
It's funny, you know, I know we don't want to get political here, but with the crazy, you know, shootings all over the nation, you know, over the past, you know, 30 years even, it's amazing that it's never happened before like this, actually. It's kind of extraordinary that no one's ever done this before. So that fact, you know, makes it even doubly shocking. And
mm-hmm.
plus just the fact that, you know, when you go into a movie theater, you're sort of giving yourself over to the movie And you're in a very vulnerable situation there. Because it's like you're just about to go to sleep, kind of, because, you know, movies are kind of a dream state kind of thing. So it's
and it's the definition of a captive audience. You know, and I've, there have, of course, been shootings in theaters and over the past 50 years or whatever, but I've even had them occur at theaters that I managed, but nothing like, no kind of mass shooting inside of a theater as pre-planned as this one certainly. You know, it's going to happen, and we know this is going to happen, and I'm surprised it hasn't really happened in full force yet, because they've mentioned, you know, is it something to do with the movie? But you know that conversation is going to become more and more fever pitchy as soon as, you know, any kind of motive is known, or because what we know is that he dyed his hair and he told them that he was the Joker.
Right.
And no one's really, in the media, no one's really brought this up, that I could see that he would probably think he's copycatting the Joker, because what he's doing is committed the massacre at the theater, and at the very same time he wanted his apartment to blow up. You know, he wanted those different incidents that he's causing to happen simultaneously.
Right.
And
like meaningless chaos. Meaningless chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos.
So
you know
that conversation's going to happen.
It's
and it really ticks me off because, first of all, 100 million people have seen this movie.
That's
the Dark
right.
Knight, the Batman movies. This one Looney Tune, inspired his psychosis in a way that it made him do this. But so it's not a great argument to begin with. Secondly, to blame something like this on a movie, I think really belittles the tragedy. I mean,
it does.
To boil it down to something.
And it belittles the causes of it.
Yeah.
There is a cause to it, but I'll get onto that further. But you're completely right. It's stupid to blame this movie. This conversation is going to happen because, you know, it's got to happen in a 24-hour news cycle. They have to have stories. So the conversation is going to happen, but it's a dumb conversation.
Oh, yeah. I agree. I would like to add something, though. I think what this person has done, I'm not going to name him because I don't want to give him any credence, any importance.
That's wise.
I don't want to name him. I really don't. He wanted to make himself the story this weekend. The story this weekend should have been about this final chapter in this, I think, pretty incredible trilogy. Unfortunately, he took away from that. He wanted, in the age that we live in, reality-based television where everyone wants to be a famous celebrity or celebrity-obsessed culture, he wanted to be the story. And he did that.
That's right. That's right.
Really,
I mean, anybody who wants to be...
What's happened... And I think what this gentleman, he's not a gentleman, far from it, what this person did is he wanted to make himself the story. This is his claim to fame. This is how he wants to be remembered.
You know what? I mean, I've had that thought too. And it's been a discouraging week and a half, 2 weeks since the reviews came out for this movie because I was telling this to a critic friend of mine that... you know, the handful of negative reviews for this film from the established press, and each one of those negative reviews, you take all the 120 positives, there's no comments on them. But that handful of negative reviews, there's comment after comment, you're an idiot, you're a moron, and just devolving into death threats. And I thought, why do people do that? And I guess we live in an age where the internet kind of facilitates this, where it's a forum for the anonymous to assert themselves. And I guess take that to its horrific extent, and you have a mass shooter. You know, that's how mass shooters choose to assert themselves, too. I'm not saying that people that criticize critics are going to go out, are the same class as people that go out and shoot people.
No.
But, I mean, it's been very discouraging. Everything surrounding this movie, except the movie itself, has been discouraged.
Well, there seems to be some kind of thing with the Nolan fans in particular, and I've encountered this over the past 2 or 3 years. There's something about this. I think the fans of this director, and I'm, you know, not saying anything negative about the director at all, but there's something about the fans of this director. They're just incredibly rabid, and I'm wondering if it's and this goes back to the shooter here. I'm wondering if there's just a sort of a sense of kind of a lack of identity. There's a problem. There's a problem here of a lack of identity with all of these really rabid fans. Even the ones that you know post you know dumb death threats on these,
right.
On these negative reviews. It's like you're not just attacking a movie. You're attacking me.
Mm-hmm.
You're attacking me.
No, that's right.
You are not a movie. You are not a movie. You are not Batman. You are not Christopher Nolan. You are just, you're a viewer. Get a life.
You know, I think Nolan would be the first. I mean, even though Nolan has defended the fans, I don't think they're Nolan fans per se. I just think I see this with comic book fans, and I don't think they understand. There are two things going on here. There are the critics who are, and the critic, with the exception of one review from one website, all the negative reviews are completely valid. I have one problem with one review because it reeks of fanboy disillusionment on a epic scale. But otherwise, I think every critic who has had a negative review, and any negative review is valid as far as I'm concerned. Even Armand White, for that matter, is valid. Because that's your opinion. I mean, I don't understand this world we live in where, oh, God, if you don't like the same thing I like, you're a heretic. This is a huge, huge problem that we've encountered over the last decade, especially since we've been doing this show.
But I noticed something. I noticed something, though. Because I visited a lot of those message boards, and IMDb is like the prime culprit.
Oh, totally.
Of just the hatred spewing and all that kind of stuff. And I notice, with a very few exceptions, that once the shooting happened, that calmed down a lot. I think IMDb actually started deleting a lot of stuff on that day too. But there was a general change of tone, and I was thinking maybe it's a turning point. Maybe they're thinking, you know, enough of all this vitriol and nerd hate, arrogance, and you know, this is what's real and what's serious.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to come up with a motive. They're going to come up with some semblance of a motive. You know, in a way, I'm curious about it. But in a large extent, it doesn't matter. There can be no motive for killing 12 people and a 6-year-old girl. You know, there can be no way.
It's an act of an insanity. So
you will never reach a point where you say, "Oh, okay, I understand." So I understand why you do that. You know,
right.
So the talk of the motive. I mean, I've been watching. I've watched probably. I'm one of those guys that's addicted to news, and I know that they exploit every tragedy.
We did that on Friday, dude. Yeah, I know what you mean.
They exploit every tragedy until they get sick of covering it, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've been watching it. And I've been sobbing. How can you not be emotional by this? It's terrible.
You go to a movie. You don't expect to. This is the last thing you expect to happen.
But as a movie show, what I want to know from you guys is, do you think there's a stigma with The Dark Knight Rises now, and do you think it will stick, and how long?
I certainly hope not. I hope not either. It seems like after a while, people... Even though I think it's unfortunate that it's very unfortunate that I've seen in some media outlets them referring to this as the Batman Massacre.
Me too, Dean. Totally.
That's pretty terrible. But I think that this is coming out when a lot of people still haven't seen the movie, and I think once people sit down and see the movie, I think they'll find it sort of. Well, I don't know. They'll find the movie kind of soothing in some ways.
That's the word I was going to use. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the movie itself, once it's seen, will will soothe a lot of people in a lot in many different ways, and will help to erase this thing.
Yeah, I mean monetarily, I mean a lot more people stayed home and didn't go to the theater this weekend. I mean, I'm not going to criticize that. I mean, if you don't feel like up to going to the theater, or you don't feel entirely comfortable, I mean, the chances of getting killed in your home are a lot better than getting killed in a movie theater. But, I mean, I understand being on edge and that kind of stuff, but it's a personal choice, whatever you feel most comfortable with. But let me put it this way. Boys in the Hood. When I was a theater manager, we had a shooting at our theater when Boys in the Hood opened.
Wow,
and it
okay.
was they were incidents that were repeated at several places across the country
mm-hmm.
on the opening weekend of that movie. Incidents that completely ran counter to the message of that movie. So that movie was great before opening weekend, if people saw it before opening weekend. It's no less great after those incidents. But there, it will always be a footnote to that movie. I mean, the movie survived.
That movie was not stigmatized. I mean, it went on to get Best Director nomination and I think a screenplay nomination or something.
Right.
But,
yes. Mm-hmm.
So that movie was not stigmatized, and it is still considered a classic, and it is a footnote. So
that's what I think will happen.
That's
with
what's
going to
happen
Rises.
Here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
I saw it Tuesday. I thought it was great. It was no less great Saturday, but, after all this occurred. But, just posting, talking about how much I love the movie on my Facebook, I mean, I was met with people that thought it was disrespectful. And my feeling was that to chalk this event up to the content of a Batman movie is disrespectful to the victims. That's what I thought. I paralleled it to when Dan White killed Harvey Milk,
mm-hmm.
He used the infamous Twinkie defense.
Right.
So are you telling me I can't say that Twinkies taste good because it would be disrespectful to Harvey Milk?
Exactly.
It's silly.
It is very
it is.
Silly. I have so much to say about this movie. I mean...
Well, let's do it, because I don't think there's anything else that we can say about this movie.
No, I don't. I mean, I have so much to say.
Well, I have one thing to say. I do have one last thing to say the real motive of the killer, really. I mean, and I know it's difficult to understand, or even it seems, like I'm trying to forgive the killer or something like that. That's not the case. He's completely reprehensible act. But the real cause of this is loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
Loneliness was that guy's problem. He didn't get out with people. He was caught in a bubble world he was obviously a Batman fan. You know, he had Batman posters and a mask and so forth in his apartment and so forth and so on. But if you cut yourself off from people, as this person did, anybody who does that, you're going to go nuts. And that's
you could be around a lot of people, and as he must have been in classroom settings and so forth, and still be completely cut off.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same story we hear all the time and we hear it about this guy. He was quiet. He kept to himself. He was a little weird, but, he was very smart, so we just assumed that was how, brainiac geeks function. And the only, mass murderer serial killer that you never heard that about, in my memory, is, Ted Bundy. He's the only one
Ted
that
Bundy.
Was outgoing. The same, and I don't know. Something went wrong there with him, obviously.
Well, anyway, let's get to the movie.
Yeah. We've given enough lip service to this person.
We'd be remiss not to mention.
No, of course, I agree.
And there is a conversation to be had about certain aspects of it, and I'm sure that we'll be having it in weeks and months ahead, as developments come up. But for right now, let's celebrate what is a great movie,
mm-hmm.
In my mind, and I'm sure Jerry, yours, and I'm excited to hear about your view, Dean. So, impressions from watching the movie, I guess. Just give me some general impressions, both of you guys.
Okay, who wants to go first?
Well, you go first, Jared.
Okay. I've only seen the movie twice, and I have not seen an IMAX.
Only
seen it twice. I have not seen the IMAX yet because it was sold out.
It's only been 3 days, for God's sake.
Yeah,
okay,
for God's sake. I saw Inglourious Basterds three times in 2 days. Less than 2 days, actually. So, I think I want to first preface this. I read Harry Knowles' review before I went to go see it.
Oh, jeez.
And if that isn't sour grapes, fanboy disillusionment...
what was that review like?
Oh, my God, Dean. It was like, God forbid, they didn't make the movie I wanted.
From the first frame. I mean, from the conception of every single character.
I had to step away from the computer. I went and kept laughing and going back. You know, it's not a very long review, but I had to step away. It's just like, really? What did they not give you that you wanted? I mean,
exactly. Yeah.
But having said that, I went to go see it, and the first thing that struck me about the movie is I wasn't bored. You know, it's a 2-hour and 45-minute movie. I never felt it was slow. Never. I only have one beef with this movie right now, and it's. Can we talk about spoilers in this, Jamie, or do you want to hold off?
Yeah, that's a good question. First, let's get this out of the way. How far can we go into?
I don't want to give away the major twist, and then I want to give away the.
Okay, then. Okay.
Okay.
But I do want to say there is a reveal here. There's a reveal in this movie I always knew was coming. It's and the way it is presented, while it completely floored me, I knew it was coming. I'm not angry about it. Not angry about it at all, because given the way that Nolan has treated the lineage of these of this particular family, it floored me. I had a way that this movie was going to end. And he goes off with the, how should I say it? It's like it's Devin Faraci in his review in Badass Digest said it was the ultimate version of fan fiction. I thought he was going to go off with the other woman. Okay? I had that set in my mind from 2005. It never dawned on me that he was going to go this route that harks back to almost the Adam West show. This is implied.
It does, yeah, you're
remember,
right.
There's an episode with that this is implied, and I remember from a little kid watching it, I was like, wow. And it's, you know, it's reiterated.
Yes.
And it's reiterated in the Tim Burton movies and in the animated
yes.
series. But I always thought, given the way Nolan was going with this series, it would be the other one. And that's completely,
uh-huh.
he completely, and it's a great plot twist. It's an awesome plot twist. A lot of people say, it's not, but I actually think, wow, I did not see it coming. I mean, it was a given that when this actress was cast in this part, that would be who she was really playing, but the way you did it, wow, kudos to you, Mr. Nolan. I didn't see, this never dawned on me that this
okay,
was
so
the way
so what you're saying is the ending completely surprised you and you loved it.
Oh, yeah. I can't complain. I can't complain with the way he was going. With the way
no.
he was going with it, you would have to be a really miserable SOB to say, oh, this, I'm going to go home and burn all my action figures and comics or whatever. I mean, you could.
Is that something that Harry Knowles said?
I'm sure he's got, like, Chris Nolan. I mean, this is the thing about Harry Knowles though, that's very funny. He then makes a point in the comics, the comments of Ain't It Cool News, and I like Harry Knowles. I have his book. I don't really pay that much attention to Ain't It Cool News.
I find him annoying. I have to tell you, I find him annoying.
Dean, I see that I can understand that perfectly, but I give him the benefit of the doubt. But this review, this floored me. When I saw, I go to Ain't It Cool News now maybe once or twice a year, not really that much anymore. No? So I wanted to go see what the Dark Knight Rises, and when I saw the headline, Harry's profound disappointment, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Of all the films, Of all, yeah. This is the one that you want to wage the jihad against.
He must not have been invited to the set or something.
I wouldn't have been invited to the set.
Yeah, because that's generally
be
how he
that
operates.
Could be it.
I mean, I think his first sin is that he's a terrible writer.
That's
my thing. That is so great. I love that you said that. That's my biggest thing.
He shouldn't
my
even pretend like he is.
Terrible writer.
But I want to.
Yeah.
I think the movie, and especially what the. I went back and watched Batman Begins on Friday night, and then because my brother had not seen that, he'd seen The Dark Knight, but he hadn't seen Batman Begins. I don't know how we let that slip by, but so we went back then yesterday to see. He loved The Dark Knight Rises. He really did. I think overall, what people need to be reminded of, especially people Batman purists and comic book purists, have to be reminded of, Nolan used these characters to tell a story that he wanted to tell. And David Goyer, he was respectful enough, and especially in this third film, is surprisingly, he is very respectful to the Batman mythology. Let's not make any bones about it. This is the most that he's ever in the three films where he's been very faithful, but he wanted to tell a story. One of the things I really liked about this was that they're the political overtones, but they're very shallow. They really have nothing to do with the story. There's something much more. This is a movie about vendettas that come about from the first film. This is almost, I want to say, a mob story almost.
Mm-hmm.
It really
yeah.
has, you know, you Bane doesn't really care too much about the Occupy Wall Street or the 1% versus the 99%. And even one of the Commissioner Gordon even says that to Matthew Modine's character, this is all just theatrics. When he goes to see, you know, to tell him, you know, that's a great scene, actually. I love that scene where he goes into his house and he goes, you have your wife answering the door? And I like that. I like that it's not, because, you know, maybe 10 years ago I would have appreciated the political overtones, but I'm glad they don't, because I think they get lost in a movie like this. The thing that really I loved about this movie was we always say Batman works, it's about individualism, but in this one, it's about the team. He has everyone
yeah.
working for him in that third act, and that's something that needs to be emphasized. You know, there's been a lot of criticism about Chris Nolan in these films that the films fall apart in the third act. Here,
yeah.
it comes together perfectly.
Yeah. I feel that he took some of those criticisms to heart when
mm-hmm.
it came to the third act.
I mean, but the teamwork aspect is also very encouraging and very inspiring. And
it was great, for instance, seeing Commissioner Gordon, for instance, you know, even with a wound and getting out of the hospital, you know, and going and doing all of the, you know, crazy stunts that he has to do, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, crawling all over that truck and getting caught in the back with a nuclear bomb and the truck is falling all over the place and everything.
I think that's great about it, too.
He's a tough old dude.
And Nolan's always been good at, I mean, a large cast in these all three of these movies, but he's always been good at giving each one of them something to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I felt like that maybe a little less so with Morgan Freeman's character but in this one, but certainly Michael Caine and Gary Oldman are given stuff to play,
mm-hmm.
you know, in this movie, and they come across very strong
mm-hmm.
as supporting
Absolutely.
Characters.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Dean, give your opinion, quick general thoughts, and then I'll give mine.
Well, you know, I'm not a comic book fan. I'm not a. I mean, you know, it's fine. They're fine, whatever. But they're not my deal. And I'm not a superhero movie fan, if you guys well know.
I would never have known about you, Dean.
I did like Batman Begins quite a bit, but of course I'm not a fan of The Dark Knight, except for Heath Ledger's performance, and maybe a little bit of the craft in it. But I think that it's badly edited and just confusing all the way, most of the way through. So I come into this movie with low expectations, and to me it felt like homework, actually. I have to say that wasn't too long into it. I think the moment where I decided that I loved it
was pretty early on in the movie, and came surprisingly from Anne Hathaway, who I think is the MVP of the movie.
I agree. I agree with you.
That moment where she comes in, not giving anything too much away here, but, she comes in, she's at the party that Bruce Wayne's giving and everything, and she seems like she's working at the party or whatever, and he catches her, getting into his stuff. And she does that great move where she he's hobbled, he's got a cane and everything. She does that great swift move where she knocks that cane out from under him, and then before you know it, she's out that window. And I said, okay, I'm going to love this movie. I think I'm going to love it now. Now, I'll tell you something about this movie. It's really interesting. Some of my very favorite things about it. It does seem to me, first of all, that Christopher Nolan might have taken some cues from some of the negative reviews. Who knows, maybe even read my negative review of The Dark Knight and who knows. But my problem with a lot of superhero movies is that I never feel like the main character is in any real kind of jeopardy, so therefore I don't feel very excited. It's just like, we're just sitting here waiting for the ending, It's like, we know how it's going to end already,
Yeah.
And I really felt a sense of jeopardy in this movie. Very, very palpable. This is the first movie that I can remember. Out of the trilogy, I don't remember a scene, where I really felt like Batman was doomed. I always felt like he was going to be able to pull out, a Batcopter or whatever, or a bat gun or whatever, and get out of things, I felt many moments in this movie where I thought, oh man, there's no way he can't make it, because I thought, there's been a little criticism about Bane as a, I read the Roger Ebert review before I went to go see it. There's been a little criticism from him, at least, about how Bane was not a great villain. And I thought that Bane, it's slightly unfortunate that a great actor like Tom Kelly is kind of hobbled a little bit in a great way by, having his entire face covered by that mask. Mm-hmm. So, but I felt that he was a very formidable villain, especially physically. And this is the first person, in the last two movies you had two wispy villains. You had thin little, Cillian Murphy in the first movie, which, by the way, I find the first movie incredibly horrifying. I think he's an incredibly horrifying villain.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got, the equally wispy Heath Ledger. But in this one, you've got a guy that, I'm telling you, he was beefed up.
I wouldn't mess with him.
And I tell you another thing, this is the first movie where they have a guy in there who really knows how to throw a punch. That guy knows how to throw a punch.
Mm-hmm.
It was exciting. This was also the first movie where you really get a hand-to-hand fight between the villain and the hero.
Mm-hmm.
And a really well-filmed one, too. You remember in the first Batman Begins, we first see Christian Bale, and he's out there, in some foreign country or whatever, and he gets into some kind of fight, and it's real shaky cammy, sort of, and you can't tell who's hitting who or whatever. Not like that in this movie.
No.
You really got a sense of where everything was. Everything was perfectly filmed, perfectly edited. There was no sense of, oh, they're cheating here. I think that it becomes a very human story in the end. For many reasons, and the whole idea, I think that in this movie, Bruce Wayne has everything stripped away, and he can't rely on the things that he had to rely on before.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to rely on other people. This
right.
is the team aspect coming in.
Yeah.
He has to rely on other people to do it. And he has to and he even has to rely on someone that or hope to rely on someone that he might not be on his side, you know, the Catwoman character.
Mm-hmm.
So I really love that. You know, I think what this ultimately, what this third film shows is, as the whole trilogy goes, it's really the story of somebody who has been shielded by his own internal hurt and his money,
mm-hmm.
and sort of a sense of trying to give back, but in some give back to the people in some sort of weird way, but it's all of these things have shielded him from the realities of his own heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the movie is the trilogy is really about somebody trying to regain their heart.
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
So, but I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was, craft-wise, it was brilliant all the way through. Never got slow. Never got confusing. I was always right on top of things. You could make some kind of arguments about the whole, the whole introduction of the 99% versus 1% kind of thing. And it's funny. I was watching it. I was thinking. So what is this movie saying? Is this movie saying that we'd be better off just having the one? You know, is the status quo better? You know. Because Batman is fighting to keep the status quo, which the status quo is the 1% and the 99%. That's
right.
It, you know, that's what he's eventually fighting for, really. You know, and I'm thinking, well, you know, I mean, we here in the 99% who are watching this movie, there was something satisfying about seeing, for instance, that shot of the Wall Street guy going out on the ice and just plopping right through.
Right,
you know?
Well, he was a prick. He was.
Yeah, he was. But him plopping right through. There was something satisfying about that. You know, and
mm-hmm.
but it puts the movie's politics into sort of a murky area. But that said, it doesn't matter. The movie works, and
mm-hmm.
it does what it's supposed to do. It's exciting, and it really goes over the top in doing what we hoped it would
mm-hmm.
do. So any of these negative reviews, just like when all the positive reviews came out about The Dark Knight and everything, I was like, yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand why they're giving it such a positive thing. Yeah, Heath Ledger, yeah, but that's it.
Yeah.
Well, same thing here. I don't understand how you could give a negative review to this movie. It does everything that a super. It's the best. It has to be among the top three best superhero movies ever made. So that's it.
I wanted to add something you said about the politics of the movie, and it's interesting because, you know, when she says there's a storm coming, Mr. Wayne, you know, he says
yes.
the exact same thing in Batman Begins to Alfred as Bruce Wayne. So
mm-hmm.
I always thought that was interesting they repeated that. But there is an interesting thing that Bane says to Daggett, the evil investment banker, I guess, as we would. I don't know what his full name, but Daggett was his last name, and he says about the thing about money, and Bane goes to him, you think that your money gives
what?
You dominion over me?
Over me, yeah.
I thought
great.
That was one of the more telling things as far as if you want to go into the whole 1% versus 99%. And it is a very interesting, it's a great line. It's like, you think I'm going to kill you about in 2 seconds. You know?
Just because you paid me? Just because you paid me, you think that makes you my boss?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
It was a very, that's one of the more interesting things that not a lot of people brought out, but it's a great line. I mean, even though, you know, regardless what you think of the politics of the movie, I thought that was a great little segment, but it is Anne Hathaway when she at the Miranda Tate fundraiser says, there's a storm coming. And
yeah, that was a key line.
Yeah.
That was a very key line.
Well, yeah, even though what she said doesn't actually apply to Bruce Wayne because he gives half of his wealth to charities. But,
and he got raked over the coals as far as his money was concerned in this movie.
Yeah. I think it's a great movie. I think it's big. I think it's cinematic. I think, first of all, to talk about what I found to be the negatives. In terms of the political aspect of the movie, I didn't think, I thought it lacked clarity. And I did think it was very surface and very confused.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that he's towing a line where I think that Republicans and Democrats can probably look at it and not find anything to kvetch about. But,
right.
And personally, I felt from my experience watching the trilogy that this, the political ramifications of the second one were a lot clearer than in this one. And I think that this one was probably a little too complicated for its own good. It had a bit too much stuff in there. I don't think there was any reason for that subplot about erasing Catwoman, Selina Kyle's identity, and that whole subplot that they brought up several times that I didn't feel had much bearing on the story itself.
You know, that subplot actually passed by without me actually, you know, really even caring that it took up too much time.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why it should go. Because if we don't care about it being in the movie, why is it in the movie?
Yeah, I guess.
Thirdly, the movie's not going to have an iconic figure like Heath Ledger in his portrayal of the Joker. I mean, that's I can't even count that as a fault because I can't expect that to happen again. What I really love about the movie is I think for the first time in the trilogy that Christian Bale is the one that takes center stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the arc of his character, he is given more colors to paint Bruce Wayne Batman with in this movie than in the other two. I really felt his arc. And anyone that thinks that arc is out of place with the other two movies, I don't see how that could possibly be the case. From the very beginning, he was talking about this arc. What I love about that journey is he always wanted to get to a place where Gotham no longer needs Batman, where they find what he has to offer within themselves, and they remain vigilant to be free of corruption and thrive in their lives. And I think in terms of the 99% and the 1%, I don't think it necessarily paints either class with a stereotypical brush. I think what the movie actually says is that if we don't speak truth to power, if we buy the lies without protest, then everyone suffers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the key to their salvation is to reach that point, to find the kind of to find the Batman in themselves. So
he says that to John Blake. He says that anyone could be Batman.
Yes, true. So I mean that's emotionally that's really what got me. But after that first hour, and I do think it's a big first hour of setup. But after that first fight with Bane and Batman, the movie really gets going, and just an overpowering sense of despair. I mean, I I've never felt in a big studio movie before, and it doesn't let up, and it's very palpable. It's one of the most visceral cinematic movies I've seen in a long, long time. So I like all that. I love Michael Caine in it. And I did think Anne Hathaway was very good in it.
She was.
But Christian Bale was actually the high point of the movie for me.
Yeah,
for the first time of these three.
No, he really – there's a lot in there about Bruce Wayne. I think that's the most interesting thing about this whole trilogy, though, is that we're really more concerned with Bruce Wayne than we are with Batman for the most part. Because, I mean, Bruce Wayne is such an interesting character, and unfortunately, now Tim Burton did his best in both of those movies to explore Bruce Wayne, but let's be very honest, he was overshadowed by the villains in those
always
movies. Always. Yeah. I mean, it was very impossible for you to get a reading of Bruce Wayne. But here, from the first frame of Batman Begins, we do get a feeling of Bruce Wayne, and that's thanks to Nolan and especially Christian Bale's performances throughout these films. But I think this is his richest performance. I agree with you, Jamie. It's such a rich... I mean, those scenes in the prison alone are...
And by the way, I always love how he puts unexpected supporting cast in these three
Tom
movies.
Conti.
Tom Conti.
Tom
Conti in prison.
Tom Conti hasn't been... I haven't seen Tom Conti in a movie in, like, 2 decades.
Since
like,
Ruben Reuben.
Like, yeah, I mean, you think about it, he was a Best Actor nominee back in 81 or 82 for... Or maybe it was 83 for Ruben Reuben.
Mm-hmm.
And, that, you know, then he just kind of sort of sank into other Irish movies and stuff like that, and then just sort of disappeared completely. But,
I mean, what's that call like? Tom, Mr. Conti, I'd like you to be in The Dark Knight Rises. What?
Oh,
you
great.
Sure you have the
I
right Tom Conti?
Him. I mean, that was so
was
cool.
Was that William Devane as the president?
Yes.
That was William Devane as the president.
And of course, Matthew Modine.
That was amusing to me too. Yeah.
Matthew Modine with the highest profile supporting role out of those people. Interesting. In terms of Bane, we have a caller on 571 area code. I'm going to pick you up in just a second. But in terms of Bane, I didn't have a problem with his voice. I actually liked the way the voice was altered.
I did too. It really
I understood
popped.
Everything he said.
Me too. I thought he was, that was not an issue, not at all. It was amazing how his voice popped out. Like, it was like the lead sound effect in the entire movie, really. It was louder than, you know, even the Batcopter going by, it seemed like to me. It really popped out there. Mm-hmm. It was good.
Yeah. So, I liked much about it. But if I had to choose... I would choose The Dark Knight over this, actually.
Really? Not me. Because I find the politics of The Dark Knight, as I said on the show, to be completely confusing. I feel like like you do about the politics of this one, like about, you know, The Dark Knight, which is, you know, the whole thing about terrorism and everything like that, and him just trying to cause chaos. Well, look, the terrorists aren't just trying to – terrorists in real life are not trying just to cause chaos. They have a reason for doing things. It's not just to see the world burn. They have a reason for doing things. There might be a reason that we don't want to hear about and we don't agree with, but there is a reason.
Well, maybe they do, but the Joker does not. But the politics of the second movie for me was, how do you fight a tyranny like that and not sacrifice your own kind of soul in the process? I mean, and that was what we were struggling with at the time with terrorism. So, I mean, that was the politics for me. It wasn't the Joker's motive. Let's take this call.
Like
571 area code. 571, I'm bringing you up now.
Hey, what's going on? This is Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Hey,
how
Mark.
You doing, dude?
Hey, Mark.
Hey, how are you? This is probably the only show I'm ever going to call on because of the subject matter, and I just wanted to give my thoughts on the movie since I was able to see it only once, so I do need to work on that. But I know that you guys were talking about Bane's voice earlier and had briefly alluded to it, but did anybody think that was a little bit too cleaned up? I know that Chris Nolan had been given a lot of grief in the earlier screenings that they were showing where they were saying that it was too garbled, and this and that, I can't understand it. And then it almost seemed just kind of, I don't know, a little off-putting with how it was being, projected over the speakers whenever I was actually watching the movie.
There is some kind of digital effect on it. And you know, I saw the prologue and when it screened earlier in the year, and I can tell you, it was garbled. I didn't understand a single damn thing he said in that prologue. So, I mean, they majorly cleaned it up. But
I personally would rather hear all of the dialogue than not hear it. So, you know, what I'm saying? It's like, I'm glad they cleaned it up. So I don't have any problem with how and that voice, like I just said, that voice does pop out there. And it is understandable all the way through. So I appreciate that they did that.
Well, I think with the voice, my only two, I guess, complaints, if I had to call them complaints, would be that and the way that everything just kind of neatly wrapped up towards the end, without giving spoilers away. But I know that you guys already know what I'm about.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about, and I don't mind it, even because it does work out. But in those spoilers, I won't lie to you. I was expecting it just a different. Not that it didn't detract from my enjoyment of the movie, but a couple of years ago, I would have thought, wow, it would have gone somewhere completely different.
I took it as kind of when that moment happens, and it happens very quickly, and we're expecting it to be long and drawn out. I was okay with it because I knew bigger threats were present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they had to solve. So get that out of the way, and then let's solve this other bigger crisis that we've got going on.
Well, that's a big, very big crisis.
but you're not aware of that bigger crisis until that third act twist,
mm-hmm.
right before this happened. So I mean, you're kind of ramping yourself up for this big extended kind of showdown.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we're really talking around these spoilers.
No, we can't. We'll do that next weekend.
Like, people can't figure it out from us talking around.
I don't think they can. I will say this, though, if I can. I think it's very interesting that one of Christopher Nolan's favorite movies and his favorite Bond movies on Our Majesty's Secret Service. I'll leave it at that. Because that plays into this whole trilogy very strongly.
Mark,
yes.
You prefer, I mean, for me it's like splitting hairs, like I thought, but I gave the edge to The Dark Knight. What do you give the edge to out of the two of them?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, I've tried to stay away from the internet for what seems like 4 months now because I didn't want to read into any kind of spoilers or any kind of things. And it's hard because I'm on Twitter and Facebook and the internet all the time, so whatever. But it's going to be as good as Dark Knight. My expectation was when I was going to go see it was because Dark Knight is so iconic, you have Heath Ledger's performance, this and that, but taking it from the grander view of the reason why I even got excited in the first place whenever Chris Nolan was officially announced as the new director for the Batman series, and he had done Memento and Following and, you know, all these other movies, mm-hmm. cerebral movies, you know that he wasn't going to take it in a direction where, you know, I'd been taken before. I had read an article about how Chris O'Donnell and some of the other actors in Batman and Robin were literally being told by, you know, whoever the Barker was on set, you know, you're in a cartoon, so act like you're in a cartoon. And, you know, truth be told, I've seen Dark Knight more times than I care to admit, but I always got the feeling that if it really got down to it, could this happen? Could it actually, you know, Playboy decide to, you know, save the city that he loves much from a bunch of crazies, and then the crazy get crazier, and then he's got to amp it up. And I always thought that, you know, that was what was really special about how Chris Nolan had put this whole arc, this whole film into, you know, real time, into an actual world where it could actually exist.
Uh-huh.
But again, you know, I love the special effects or lack of CGI. Chris Nolan's always blown my mind with how he's been able to do that without literally no computer assistance at all.
He uses actual crowds in this movie. I mean, there aren't, even in the football stadium, you can see a lot of empty seats, which I guess happens in football stadiums with a recession like we're having now. But he doesn't, like, CGI every single seat filled in that football stadium. They're real crowds in this movie, which is great.
Yeah, I know that there's been complaints, obviously, before about Katie Holmes' performance, you know, Maggie Gyllenhaal. But, you know, if you wanted strong female leads in a Batman movie, this is your perfect example.
Yeah.
They were awesome. You know, obviously, it'd be, you know, beating a dead horse if I were talking about Anne Hathaway and how cool she was in this movie. And, you know, it's good. I mean, it's really good. I wouldn't say as much as Dark Knight, but then again, I've only seen it once. So talk to me in a week.
Yeah. Okay.
I have an opportunity. So.
Okay.
But anyway,
you don't think beating a dead horse would be complaining about Maggie Gyllenhaal? Like, literally?
I didn't mean to do that intentionally, but sure.
Because she looks a little horse-like to me. Okay.
She is a little horse-like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, Mark, is this like, what, the second time that you've called in 6 years?
I think so.
Thank you, Mark.
It's awesome.
And hey, thanks for taking my call.
All right, buddy. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye-bye. Okay, final thoughts, McLaughlin Group.
I mean, you know, it's
it's got to be considered one of the movies of the year. There's no question about it.
Is it going to get Oscar love? Is it going to get
nominations? Yeah, I think it will. I do think it will. I think it will get a Best Picture nomination. I think it would be difficult not to nominate it. I don't know that Christopher Nolan, I hope that he gets a director nomination finally. I think it's funny. I think his, Aaron would disagree with me, but I loved Inception. I just thought Inception was terrific. And I really think that Inception, the exercise of making Inception sharpened his filmmaking skills.
I agree with that.
Tremendously. Sharpened his ability to edit, I think, is the number one thing. It's the editing that I think really improved in this one. The fact is that the movie is 3 hours long, and I never got bored, and that's because the editing is really, mm-hmm. really well done. Maybe there could have been some things, like you say, Jamie, that could have been excised, but that's minor. It might have gotten out 2 or 3 minutes of the movie. But
it's minor to what I view as the accomplishments of the movie. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, it is not the perfect movie. I mean, it has flaws, just like I can see that The Dark Knight has flaws.
Yeah,
but I see that the flaws that I found in The Dark Knight, some of them are corrected in this one, and some of them are just blown up even more because of the kind of bloated nature of this third film. I mean, everything's bigger in this film. So that includes some of the faults from the other film that I found. But on the other hand, I think that he took some criticisms to heart, and he in terms of female characters in the third act, and he improved upon them. Well, essentially, if your third act in the last of your trilogy doesn't work, I mean, that's the most important part of the whole trilogy, really.
Yeah, you don't want that.
You've got to tie it all up. Do you think it'll get Oscar recognition, Jerry?
I think it will. I'm not sure where yet. We still have a lot of big guns coming out this year, so we'll see. I think it's I want to say this, though. If I hear one more time how Anne Hathaway was miscast, I'm going to just have an aneurysm because the whole thing is everyone says, oh, it should have been Kate Beckinsale. Yes. Let me say something about Kate Beckinsale. When you were casting the first Underworld movie, that was revolutionary because she had never done anything like that before.
Exactly.
That
you're just repeating yourself.
What you see when I see this with people, when they say, oh, Kate Beckinsale or Mila Jovovich, no, you're missing the point of what Nolan has done. People were upset about Christian Bale being Batman or Heath Ledger being the Joker, as we all talked about.
He proved them wrong.
And with Anne Hathaway, it's the most unlikely choice. I was thinking more Emily Blunt or something like that. But this really was a good choice. And for the way the film ends, I think it's perfect. I think she's
perfect. And you know, the thing is too, she has a lot of, it's funny though, I feel like she adds a lot of humor into the movie. Although,
mm-hmm.
I will say this, sitting in the theater, I found myself the only person laughing at some of her lines.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes me wonder, are people when they go to a Batman movie, are they primed to perhaps laugh at things that happen?
I understand.
Still,
I know where you're coming from there.
There can still be humor even in this dark world that they're.
And it's not that dark.
I agree with you, Jerry. That's another thing I wanted to mention. I don't find the movie that dark.
The second one is the darkest, and the first one is dark. This one has some levity in it.
It does. It has levity. It has sexuality. It has a little bit more of a sense of fun.
Mm-hmm.
This
one does. I mean, yes, there is though. But there is within the character, especially between Christian Bale and the two female leads, and even with Morgan Freeman, which has become more and more like between James Bond and Q as this film goes on. There is levity in this film. It's not as dark. It is dark in the sense, yes, there is of what the plot is. But in the scenes, there are scenes that nothing is as dark as The Dark Knight. That is the darkest of the three films. That is really just the nihilistic vision of Vision. This one, there is levity, and I think that's because of Anne Hathaway and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, to be very honest with you. They bring some much-needed levity and some snarkiness to it that is missing in the other films, and they're not supposed to be in those other films.
See, I felt the despair of this third one more than the others, even though, you know, essentially I probably agree that the second one is the darkest of all of them. But I think it's the darkest of all of them for me because, like I said before, its politics are clear for me. But I actually found more humor in the second one, too. I mean, I thought that there was more playful interaction that came off comedic to me in the second
one. Well, there's some stuff with Heath Ledger that definitely is.
Definitely. Yeah.
But I think in this one, where everyone's saying how dark it is and everything, and especially from film critics, established film critics, and go, really, guys? I wanted to almost say, is this the only movie you've seen in the last 10 years? I mean, it's actually very... For Chris Nolan, this is actually very, very...
I mean, it
is
romance.
Dark, don't get me wrong, but it's not... How should I say it? It's not just like... It's not
look,
just like gothic nightmare.
Look. It has romance in it. It has moving moments, actual moving moments, like moments, in those final moments, you know, that I felt were incredibly moving, almost, made me tear up a little bit. I wasn't expecting that. It just gave me everything that I
especially,
wanted.
Especially my cocaine.
Yeah, Michael Caine, he's the emotional backbone of the whole series. I mean,
he is.
He's the backbone.
The only regret I had is that he's given the same dialogue at the end that he was given near the beginning of the movie. I mean, he kind of repeats exactly what he said to Bruce Wayne earlier in the movie at his most emotional scene at the end of the movie.
Right.
I think that was
a little red herring. I think that was a little red herring there, not to get.
Yeah,
too much
obviously it was. Yeah, and also very unimaginative with the dialogue. 760, I'm going to take a 760 caller. 760, you're on the air.
Hey, Jamie, it's Nick.
Hey, dude, how are you?
I'm not too bad. So I have seen the movie, and I thought it was a spectacular finale to that series.
Mm-hmm. I agree, yeah.
Film all the way around. My only issue with the film, and it's a minor nitpick, is because I know, because the news of where they were shooting this film was very hard to not see. So I knew that I couldn't, like, decipher the city as being Gotham, because I knew that's L.A., that's New York, that's Pittsburgh. I mean, seriously, it was that's the only thing that took me out a little bit, but because the other two films, Gotham feels like its own city. And this one, it kind of doesn't, and that's the only thing, it's my only nitpick, because everything else about the movie is extraordinary, the supporting performances especially.
You know,
I agree with you.
I agree
with that, too. Mm-hmm.
And actually, because one of the most special things for me about The Dark Knight was the Chicago architecture, really.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, I mean, I could, because I've been to these cities, I could tell, you know, they're in New York for the Wall Street hostage takeover, and then they bust out of there, and then they begin a chase, and all of a sudden they're in L.A. I mean, I could tell that some of those streets were L.A. streets.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. So, I mean, it takes – when you're in the rapture of a movie, I mean, a lot of people just kind of forget to look for that kind of stuff. Of course it's shot in the same place. It's logical. I mean, they're on a street, and then we cut to another street. Of course it has to be the same place. But I did notice that somewhat, too. That kind of architecture was missing from it, from the second one. So that's valid.
That's a valid thing, but not enough to take away, I think, the enjoyment of the movie experience. These are all valid criticisms. I mean,
and you could actually say that you could actually look at it like I do, that making the city more recognizable as not the fake city of Gotham, but the kind of city that we all go to and all have been to and visited,
makes it more it hits us where we live a little bit more, I think.
Yeah.
You know, making Gotham into this fake beautiful city might be, you know, might be great, like on a craft and spectacle kind of level, but when you're really trying to hit people in their hearts, you know, it's a good idea to try and make the setting of the movie like something recognizable.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it reflects how he tries to ground the characters in reality too. I mean, it's not art directed to death. I mean, the elements in the movie are relatable.
That's true in the first incarnation of the series with Tim Burton, and not that I have a problem with that, but it wasn't. I mean, Gotham City was a very fictional city in those films, and I would say all four of those films, the Schumacher ones as well. I think in the beginning, you get a feeling, oh, this is, and then definitely The Dark Knight, it's definitely Chicago. And here, I mean, yeah, you get a little bit, but you also get, given the events of the film, very Manhattan-ish. Very.
To me, it was like a very New York-y kind of Batman movie in some ways, which
let me ask this. Before we end here, he's done it. He's, I think, made an excellent cinematic trilogy, and they're going to reboot it. How soon, you know, should they hold off on this for a while? They're not, but they should.
I mean, you know, they'll have another one in another 4 years. So I think, you know, those. You know.
Maybe Darren Aronofsky will get his wish.
It's obvious, you know, where they're going to kind of go with it. You know, and I don't think that the next one will be like a reboot. Like, they're not going to start. You think they're going to, like, go reboot it and actually go back and show us the origins of Batman again?
Oh, God, I think they're going to do that totally. I mean, first of all, as a filmmaker, I wouldn't want to follow in Nolan's footsteps.
But
he has given them an opening. From the dead, I wouldn't do it.
There's an obvious opening here for them to just continue on. I don't see them going back to the beginning and doing that again. I think
Batman begins again.
Yeah, I don't. Well, see
I mean,
that.
we got the Superman reboot, which I don't know what to think about at this point.
Me either.
Well, it's kind of difficult to tell from just that little short.
Does Russell Crowe get to throw a phone at someone? That's all I need to know.
Is he in it?
He's Jor-El.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know
if he's wearing Marlon Brando's old clothes from the first.
Oh, okay. He's Jor-El. Oh, wow. So, I mean, you know, the reason they're doing Man of Steel is because the last Superman movie, Superman Returns, was so poorly received. I think, you know, I think everybody just wants to forget about that one, you know.
Well, Christopher and Jonathan Nolan were the ones that came up with the story for the new Superman movie. So, you know, I got into a skirmish about that, too, the other
night.
Yeah,
man,
you're
all over the place.
Oh, yeah?
So making waves with everyone.
I said, I welcome a darker Superman. I mean, the first two Donner Supermans are classic. They're the kind of all-American, naive movies by today's standards, but they're classics. They're terrific. The next two movies were goofy in the extreme, embarrassments. Then Bryan Singer's remake was too slavish to the Donner film, mm-hmm. and it had nothing new to offer. Actually, it subtracted from the Donner film because the Superman, you could barely delineate his Superman from his Clark Kent. Where Christopher Reeve did that brilliantly,
mm-hmm.
and plus he played it with all the charm of a runway model.
That's the problem.
So,
that's the problem.
And the guy said, "Well, I just think it's terribly unimaginative to go dark. I think they should just do it as they've always done." I said, "Oh yeah, because that's not unimaginative to do it exactly as you've done it for the past 40 years.
There's any juice you could get.
That's the definition of unimaginative, to repeat yourself for 40 years."
That said, there is something about Superman that seems a little sunnier, you know. I mean, I did read Superman comics, like the old 40s Superman comics, you know, when I was a kid. And there's just a certain sort of, sunniness and lightness to the Superman thing that I think we might miss if you know, it'll be interesting to see how they treat it with.
Oh, I'm sure we will, and
darkness.
I'm all for it. I'm all for putting that sun out. I mean, the first thing that Superman does is to rescue a cat from a tree. We can't have that, you know, do something different with Superman.
Wait, he lets the cat fall out of the tree and break its spine.
It's just the blandest of superheroes.
Well, it is.
Superman.
I mean, you brought it up. I mean, he's kryptonite. I mean, there's a book that's just come out that says the same thing. I mean, he is not the most exciting. So it is welcome with someone to shake up the bottle.
Hey, how are we going to stop Superman?
Like, you know,
oh, I don't know. Let's try what we've done the other five movies.
If they were smart with the Superman movie, if they were smart, I always considered the Bizarro Superman, you know what I'm talking about there?
Yeah, I do know what you're talking about.
I always thought the stories with the Bizarro Superman were the most fascinating to me as a kid. And that would be so great if they could do Bizarro Superman in this next movie. I mean, you know, it would be so amazing. You see, and I think that would really fit in with the sort of darkness and everything that they're looking for, would be to revive that aspect of the comic. You know, that would be a perfect way for them to go.
You should make him more human. I mean, I think the opening shot should be Superman on the toilet. He should be a Superman we can all relate to.
He has colonic problems just like you and me.
He's making a super bowel movement.
I think on that.
Where he's just straining on the toilet, and then something happens finally, and then just the toilet just explodes from the power of the material coming out.
The male on the toilet.
I think that's absolutely a plan. Yeah. Okay. Actually, I had a file that I was going to try to upload. I forgot totally about uploading it. I was going to play it, but anyway, that's dead now. So, Nicholas, do you give the – let me ask you since you're on the line. Do you give the edge to Dark Knight Rises or The Dark Knight at this stage?
At this point, I give the edge to The Dark Knight. The Dark Knight is in my top 100 of all time. The Dark Knight Rises is in the same ball field, but it's not – I mean, I've seen two other movies that I think were better this year. And so, my feeling is Dark Knight Rises is lacking, seriously. I think the real thing is, Heath Ledger, I think, is what's keeping it from being higher.
Can I bring up a point? Have we all forgotten about how I watched Batman Begins the other night? And I'd have to say, out of three, that's my favorite.
I do love Batman Begins. It is really good. I felt like this one was harking back to Batman Begins, like in a major way.
I don't think The Dark Knight's bad at all. I just think Batman Begins has to start off with those characters, that storyline. Is really an inventive way, and to go back to that in his third film. I mean, I think The Dark Knight is a great film, awesome film, wonderful film. I just think that what he did in Begins shows so much insight into what Nolan cherishes in old movies and new movies and in filmmaking in general. He really sort of said, "Oh, I'm going to do this my way. I'm going to talk to the fanboys somewhat." But then I'm going to take it in a different direction. And I appreciate that. I really do.
Yeah.
Because you know what happens when fanboys get the movie they want? It's called Watchmen. I love Watchmen.
Oh, no. That's
so
true.
I love Watchmen. I think Watchmen
movie.
Is a great
Despite
film.
It.
I think it gets better and better with each viewing. But let's be honest.
No.
You can't
How can
you
say
do anything
that?
After
with,
that.
All that terrible music in that movie. Oh, my God. Sounds of Silence
like Watchmen,
and Hallelujah
you,
and all that
well,
stuff.
Let me
come
tell
on.
You something. Let me tell you
yeah,
something.
Those terrible songs.
What do you think about Watchmen?
Well, come on. I mean, Sounds of Silence is a great – those are great songs, but they have no place in that movie. And
Dylan's times are changing? Oh, what a terrible song.
Those are great songs, but look, you don't use
that
Sounds
opening
of Silence in a movie. It's
great.
Already been used.
That's an awesome film. But the point I'm trying to make, Dean, the point I'm trying to make, I don't have a problem with Watchmen. Watchmen is actually the more times I watch it, the more I love it. But when you guys – I got to say, when you make something that is 100% devoted to almost to the original, And Roland just sent me a text. Watchmen was just awful, just awful. But I do like it. It gets better. It gets better, I think, with each viewing. I do like it. There's something about Watchmen I do like. But, you guys, when you get the movie that you want, when you get the movie that you want, that movie that you waited your whole lives for, unfortunately, it's not a crossover film.
Sometimes it doesn't happen.
You got to give some leeway to someone like Nolan who knows what he's doing. And if he changes the characters from what they originally intended for, that's okay. He respects the source material. There's no doubt in my mind that Christopher Nolan respects everything that he's touched in these films. He just wanted to take it in a different direction, and I appreciate that.
I think we just need to wait to see what kind of wonders he can do with Pokemon. I mean, I can't
see what he does with Goodnight Moon.
Ground that in a reality. That's going to be great. Nicholas, thank you for calling in.
Can I just say one more thing before we go?
No, Nicholas. You're absolutely not. Hey, Nicholas, I've got something to say to you. You ready? Hang on. Wait for it.
Jim Varney is not in hell. No.
Well, no, I was just going to say, am I the only one who thinks that Matthew Modine gave a good performance in the movie?
Yes, you are. Okay, that's it for tonight.
That was mean.
I'm kidding. No, I like Matthew Modine in the movie. It was good to see him.
It's always good to see an actor you like still get work.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah,
and Matthew Modine's been very nice to
us.
So, yeah. I like Matthew Modine a lot. He's been very nice to us. All right. Next time, who knows what next time will be. We don't have any future shows planned. Actually, we're supposed to have the executive producer of The Dark Knight Rises on the show tonight, and for obvious reasons he couldn't do it. But
right.
But okay, we will be back either Wednesday or next Sunday. We'll do something.
We'll do something. We'll be back, guys. Don't worry.
I've seen a few other tribute shows. I've seen a few other movies since, you know, in addition to The Dark Knight, that
Can I make a suggestion?
But I have to comment.
Can we interview Roland? Can we just have a show where we interview Roland for 2 hours? Because I text him a lot, and he's awesome. This guy is just, like, knows more than I think all of us some days. He's just awesome, and I think we should just have a show devoted to Roland, because he's awesome.
He and I get into it about Heat a lot, and Heat is one of my all-time favorite movies, and still he takes me to task for...
He's like Chris. He takes us to task. I love that. I love that about Roland.
Okay, so look for our next show and the title, Interview with Roland and Dean Seen Other Movies.
That's a good show. If I wasn't on the show, I'd tune into that.
Okay. That's it for us tonight, guys. Thank you for joining us. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.